Stay with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sulis. Interested in learning new skills online at a pace that suits you? Visit ecollege.ie to apply for one of our free online courses.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Well, we've just been hearing from Evelyn about the consequences of the Russian invasion of Ukraine in February of this year. Russia has been waging a pitiless war against Ukraine, killing civilians, destroying infrastructure and leaving so many without a safe place to call home. Well, the causes and the course of the war are the subjects of a new book called Invasion. The author is Guardian foreign correspondent Luke Harding, who joins me now. Luke, good morning. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Good morning, Claire.
Going back to the root of all this, the cause of all this, and Vladimir Putin has what you describe as a brooding obsession with Ukraine. Why is it so important to him and so central to his political thinking?
Well, I mean, Putin published an extraordinary essay just over a year ago where he said that Ukraine and Russia were essentially one people, as he put it. And he has long considered that Ukraine is not a country, it's not a state. Essentially, it's a lost kingdom. And it would be possible to kind of ignore this as the sort of fantasy of a dictator now in his 70th year, were it not for the fact that he acted upon it. You know, we saw this ominous buildup of troops and tanks and aircraft around Ukraine's borders last autumn, when I started going back to Ukraine. And then, of course, as you say, this pitiless invasion.
This response, though, that we've seen from Ukraine, that seems to have been the unexpected part of all of this from a Russian perspective. But we know that Ukraine is thick with Russian informants, and you would imagine that some of them must have warned Moscow that Ukraine would resist in the way that it has.
Yeah, that's a great point, and it's one of the big paradoxes of this war. I mean, Vladimir Putin thinks himself to be a brilliant spy in command of everything he sees, facing off against a weak and a resolute West, whether it's the UK, the US, Ireland, and so on. And actually, he was remarkably badly informed. And I think probably his spy agencies told him what he wanted to hear, that Ukrainians would rise up and welcome their Russian liberators, in inverted commas. And on the eve of war, I was in Kiev and I was talking to one of Ukraine's spy chiefs. And he was saying, I think rather interestingly, he was saying that we have always understood the Russians better than they have understood us. That, you know, because after all, Ukrainians are bilingual. They speak Russian, they speak Ukrainian. And he was essentially saying the Russians actually are pretty ignorant about who we are. And what happened, of course, for the Russians was a nasty surprise. They thought they would take Kiev in 3 days. 9 months on, they're still fighting.
Did he grossly underestimate Vladimir Zelensky? Did he look at him and see, well, here we have this former comedian, former actor, I can take Ukraine out now at this moment in time?
Yeah, I mean, he did. And what's forgotten now, because Zelensky is so famous, is that actually at the time of the invasion, his opinion poll ratings were sagging. Mm-hmm. And also, really, for quite a long time, up until the last minute, he was in denial about what Russia was going to do, despite very clear warnings from the US and from the UK. But since then, I mean, Zelensky has really transformed himself into a great war leader. I mean, his speeches to the Irish Parliament, to Westminster have been astonishing, full of rhetoric. One of the things I did for this book was to talk to his speechwriter, who told me that Zelensky's very keen on poetry. You know, he directs himself. He quite often sort of writes his own speeches. And, you know, one of my colleagues described him as Winston Churchill with an iPhone. And I do think there's something in that, the way that, you know, not only are we talking about a fight back on the battlefield, but actually Ukraine's been extremely successful in getting its message to the world.
OK, so let's come back then to the Russian side of things. And you describe Russian soldiers killing and mistreating civilians, looting, raping, hijacking. Can you explain why the invaders are so ill-disciplined as a military force?
Yes. I mean, I think there are several reasons. One of them is just Russian propaganda. For a period of years in the run-up to the invasion, Russians have been told by state media that Ukrainians are not really people, that they're subhuman. I mean, Dmitry Medvedev, the former president, described them as vassals. And they were under the impression that essentially Ukrainians were Nazis, or neo-Nazis, as the Kremlin calls them. And this is a ridiculous a stereotype which bears no relation to reality. I mean, Volodymyr is himself Jewish and lost much of his family in the Holocaust, but they were kind of roaming around looking for traitors, looking for Nazis. And of course, when they didn't find them, they exacted a sort of terrible price on the civilian population. And, you know, actually, Claire, it's been quite hard to report some of this material. I mean, I was in Bucha in April. I've seen mass graves in Izum in the north of the country. I was recently in Kherson province. And everywhere Russia goes, you know, when they retreat, you find torture chambers, you find bodies, and you find really unbearable stories of execution.
And that is coming from what they've been told to do, but also there seems to be very low morale amongst the Russian military. We've heard reports of them not having enough food, not having enough equipment. So maybe this also leads them down this path of inhumane treatment.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. And I think another reason is the Russian soldiers don't really know why they're there. I mean, you talk to any Ukrainian fighter on the front line and you say, look, why are you here? And they all say the same thing. And it's not because they've sort of been told to give an answer. It's because it comes from the heart. And they say, I'm fighting to defend my family, my wife, my kids, my village, my home, my country. And for Ukrainians, it's existential. They understand that if Vladimir Putin succeeds in wiping Ukraine from the map, which is really his objective, that then they'll all be enslaved or subjugated practically. And the Russian soldiers, by contrast, were told initially it was about Nazis. Then it was about saving the Donbass and the east of the country. Recently, the Kremlin, and I kid you not, has been talking about de-Satanization, rooting out satanic evil in Ukraine. Actually, my strong sense is that a lot of the Russian soldiers really don't want to be there.
Mm-hmm. You describe this in another way, Russia as being vertical, Ukraine as being horizontal in terms of how people are governed. Will you explain that, Luke?
Yes. I mean, Russia, I spent 4 years there as the Guardian's Moscow bureau chief until 2011 when I was kicked out. And what's clear is it's a very vertical society, by which I mean it's almost feudal, that there is a strongman president, a czar figure, if you like, and then there's the mass of ordinary Russians who tend to bow to authority and do what they're told. And Ukrainians, by contrast, they have a sort of democratic tradition going back to the 17th century, and they're rather kind of, they're creative and anarchistic, and also they distrust the state. I mean, they've had such a lousy experience of the Soviet state, of persecution by Moscow, of famine, and they're just incredibly self-organized. I mean, I describe them as a sort of super organism, horizontal, and whether that's students making Molotov cocktails or, you know, volunteers coming back in spring from abroad to fight on the front line, or old ladies singing songs and making camouflage nets, you get the impression that the whole of Ukrainian society is working towards victory, which is still some way off, but you can kind of begin to glimpse it.
Yeah, it is very complicated, though, isn't it? And I've spoken to Ukrainian people here who tell me about their relatives in the east of the country who are pro-Russia and who support Russia. How strong is that sentiment? Is it measurable in Ukraine?
I mean, hard to sort of measure it with a figure, but my sort of strong impression is that this is much smaller than it was. And that was one of Putin's mistakes. I mean, back in 2014, it's true that there was a significant minority in the east of the country, in places like Donetsk and Luhansk, who were sort of pro-Kremlin. And Putin basically took advantage of this to start a war and to create these kind of pseudo territories in the east and around Donetsk and Luhansk. Since then, actually, the reality is that the sort of pro-Russian sentiment is really very small. I mean, there are a few people for sure, but actually the overwhelming majority of Ukrainians hate Putin, really loathe Russia. And a lot of them have fallen out with their Russian relatives. I mean, bear in mind, these two countries were very close for a long period of time. And actually what we're seeing now is a great, you know, it's decolonization. It's a great anti-imperial uprising against Big Brother and against the Russian state. Mm.
We see this weaponizing of winter now coming into these colder months in Russia, the systematic destruction of Ukraine's infrastructure, these drone and missile attacks on power stations, Luke. Could those attacks eventually limit Ukraine's will and ability to resist?
Yeah, I mean, I've been in Kiev when you know, you wake up in the morning and you hear an air raid siren, and you try and figure out whether you go to the shelter or whether you just take your chances. And then 10, 15, 20 minutes later, you hear a boom, and then another boom. And this, as you say, has been Russia over successive weeks, really since early October, destroying civilian infrastructure, sort of knocking out power stations, sending cruise missiles all across Ukraine. What can I tell you? I mean, Kiev is dark much of the time. If the electricity is working, you charge your phone. But I don't think this is going to break Ukrainians. I mean, it makes them furious, but their will to survive, to adapt, to endure, and to liberate their territory, I think, is undimmed. You know, Putin does it because he can do it, but it won't win him the war. And actually, on the battlefield, Russia is going backwards. And I think next year in the spring, when the weather improves, we'll continue to go backwards.
You do warn, though, that what comes after Putin could be even worse than Putin himself. Who might replace him?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. And I sort of do think, I mean, look, we haven't, Claire, we haven't seen a palace coup. I mean, we all have the scenario in our heads from a very amusing film by Amanda Iannucci, The Death of Stalin. But it hasn't happened. You know, Putin hasn't died. He's still in control. But I do feel we're reaching the end of his rule. But also, unfortunately, that anyone who comes next will probably share some of the same prejudices, the same chauvinistic attitude towards Ukraine. And I think one figure to watch is this terrifying oligarch called Yevgeny Prigozhin, who runs a mercenary outfit called the Wagner Group. Now his soldiers have been fighting in the east of the country. Prigozhin, unlike Putin, has been close to the front line and appears to be on maneuvers. And I think he's someone to watch in the event that Putin suddenly falls off the throne.
Well, we'd like to find out more about him, Luke, and perhaps we can speak again and we'll go more into detail into who he is. But for now, thank you very much. And a reminder that Luke's book, Invasion, is published by Guardian Faber. It's out now and it is written by Luke Harding. Luke, thank you very much for joining us on the programme. Now, I just want to bring you up to date with what's happening in Qatar. It's all kicking off because that game between Cameroon and Serbia is just coming up to 70 minutes on the pitch and it's 3-3. It's an extraordinary game, full of energy. The fans are jumping out of the stands and that's where it is at the moment. Any update on that? We'll bring it to you. 3-3.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.